to Hell and Back, the banned account of Gallipoli by Sidney Locke, including a biography by Susanna DeFries and Jake DeFries, and read by Shane Nagle. Shortly afterwards, Lieutenant Sand singled me out as his victim to attend him on a telephone-laying expedition. I felt unwilling to receive this honour, which involved getting up at 3:30 in the morning. On the way from the dugout, I met Sands wandering round the cookhouse like an uneasy ghost. He ignored my existence for several minutes, but shot a glance at me more than once out of the corner of his eye, though he spoke no word and went on with whatever he was doing. At last he pushed his hands into his pockets and started off into the dark. "Come along, Lake, and take that reel with you," he said over his shoulder. I picked up the handreel with telephone wire and hurried after him. We followed a track along the dugouts and went down into the valley. Clear starlight was overhead, but it was absolutely dark down there. I had no idea where we were going or how far, but soon discovered we were moving towards our right wing. We took the communication trench, which ran from our observing station, followed it to the end, and reached the edge of the big valley. But instead of turning up the valley, Sands went straight across. We passed an Indian army camp on our left. There was nothing to betray its existence until we heard the stamping of mules. Then we picked up a small path winding round the bottom of the hill. I remembered passing that way a day or two before. Sands continued to push on a pace or two ahead of me. Presently, without turning his head or making any movement, he called back, "Do you know where A Battery is, Lake?"
"Yes, sir. I was there 2 days ago."
"It's moved since then."
"Then I've no idea where it is."
"Neither have I,"
he said with a laugh. "Are we supposed to go to A Battery?" I asked.
"Of course. We have to lay a wire from headquarters to the battery's observing station."
"Then why haven't we brought a guide, sir?"
"What do we want a guide for? I was halfway there myself yesterday. I have a good general idea where the place is, and I was given details last night. Come on, Lake, we mustn't waste time. This isn't a good place to be after daybreak."
At those words, I began to doubt whether that young lieutenant knew what he was doing. The walk soon worked away my drowsiness. I wished we had been on a more peaceful errand, for this part of the coast was magnificent. It was warmer than I had yet known at such an early hour. In fact, I found it too warm for scrambling up those steep hills. A multitude of stars looked down on us with an unfathomable gaze. The little winds that met us ran in and out of the bushes, flip-flapping the smaller leaves and stirring the larger ones. The scents of spring flowers floated down with a strength and sweetness that the day never let them keep. The heavy dew on the bushes splashed my forehead and my hands with cool drops. I caught some leaves, rubbed my hands in them, and so had my first wash for the day. In that silent, starry night, we pushed on to prepare for fresh destruction. I could not hear a sound or catch a movement of beast or bird, but feared that Turkish eyes might be looking out from the bushes.